and welcome to Green to the Legendarium. We cover books the other Legendarium doesn't, and a few they already have. I'm Hiran Fan, and I'm joined today by my constant partner, Ashman.
Hello, everybody.
And Chesky.
Heyo.
Today we're covering Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. If you don't know what it is, it won the 2019 Locus Award, and that's the best award that I could find. And the other ones I'm not going to mention because it's their garbage. It's based loosely on the tale of Rumpelstiltskin, and I don't really have much else to say about it. Do you guys want to give your non-spoilery thoughts about it? Maybe we should give a quick synopsis?
Does that fall under spoilers or no?
I'm not going to give a summary, maybe a teaser for if people want to read it. You want to tag team this? So, story's about Miriam, and it takes place in like this, I don't know, vaguely Eastern European setting. It's got a czar, and it's got Jews, and it's got like ice fairies named Asteric, and it's got moneylenders, and it's demons. Yeah, demons.
And
Chernobog. Yeah. You ever seen Fantasia and that big scary bald mountain one? That's Chernobog. It's got Chernobog.
Yeah, literally that guy shows up.
Let's see. They mentioned Baba Yaga. Yeah, a lot of Eastern European stuff.
There's a lot of inspiration from other fairy tales as well, like Rapunzel and Hansel and Gretel.
A lot of suffering. A lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot of people, I don't want to get into that. But yeah, there's people dying and suffering and starving, and there's beating, family abuse.
Yeah.
All the good stuff you want to read about in a book.
Yeah. coming of age, obviously. Well, of course, it's very fairy tale. It's very much modern fairy tale. And
yeah, it's a retelling
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a heavy adaption.
Yeah. Prose is good. It's low on action scenes.
And yeah, definitely. Don't go here high on like
character. Yeah.
If you think of Rumpelstiltskin, I don't often think of a lot of action scenes in that, so it made sense. Wasn't
there? Well, I'm waiting for somebody to do that, maybe in a movie format.
The high action Rumpelstiltskin scene.
I mean, there's got to be a few of those in Once Upon a Time, right?
Never seen it.
Once Upon a Time is its own thing we don't talk about here.
Well, I think that gives a vaguely enough nebulous idea into the audience who hasn't read it what it's like. How do you like it?
I love it, but that's me. I mean, I always love it. But it was great. I like it. This is my second time through it, and it was just as good as the first time, if not better.
Yeah, I really loved it as well. It might be my favorite new read of the year. I don't know. I really, really loved the character of Miriam, which should come as no surprise to people who know my tastes. I thought that it went on a little long. I think the pacing could probably have been improved a bit. But like, it's not a big complaint. I thought the writing was absolutely beautiful.
Would you say it's simple and not simplistic?
I might. I don't know if I would call it simply, but it just flows so well. Like, looking back, there aren't any like isolated quotes that I like. Everything like works so well within its context, I think. I ended up highlighting a lot because it's just like, oh, this is something that really spoke to me and I thought was really beautiful. But I'm not sure how well these things can be separated from their context. So this is to say, like, everything works very well within the story.
I think it's a good way of putting it. I would say the prose is simple, but not in a bad way. I think it was done excellently. Mm-hmm. I probably should say this first. I started out reading it. This is my second time through, and life got in the way. I had to go to America, and I had to finish the book on audiobook for the last three quarters, and audiobook's really good, so I could recommend that. But I also had no problems following the story or understanding what's going on or getting the context, and I was surprised how easy it was to follow. And I do really think that this is an excellent example of very good prose that isn't complex and isn't hard to follow. Maybe some might say window pane, but I don't want to compare the two because I think it's unfair to Naomi Novik. But I've been reading Kazuo Ishiguro lately, and they kind of remind me of each other because Ishiguro, what he likes to do is give a limited first person perspective. And there's a lot of subtext there. And Naomi Novik, in a few of her POVs, does that incredibly well. In fact, from the first switch to the second, from the main character to the secondary character, you kind of learn something about the last scene and interaction that you wouldn't have found out from the other perspective because of, you know, the subtext that was there. I thought that was done excellently.
Mm-hmm.
So I love
great.
Yeah, I agree. So I think this book was fantastic. I would definitely read it again.
Add on to this, I think that the character voices were done phenomenally. The,
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there are three main POVs, and each of them like has their own like their own different way of perceiving the world, and this comes through very, very well through the writing.
Yeah, and you could probably read a sentence from their section, and you could immediately know whose POV it is.
Yeah,
that's just good writing.
Yeah,
and they're all appealing too.
Yeah,
is this your guys' first Naomi Novik book, or have you read other things by her?
I like I said, this is my second time through this book, but I've read Uprooted as well. I didn't like it as much, although I did like it.
I have not read anything else from Naomi.
I think her best work is these standalone fairy tale stories like Uprooted and Spinning Silver. I've liked her other stuff, and I haven't finished her Temeraire series, but it was good when I started. But I really think she does really good in this type of story, where it's just a standalone novel in a fairy tale setting.
And it feels so magical to me. Not to get into the magic systems debate, but there are rules here, but it's everything feels so organic with how it works, and it fits so naturally, and it feels so fairy tale and well suited for what she's trying to do.
Related, the plot is really tight. Like, I know you said that you thought there were some pacing issues, but like everything fit together so well in the end. I was very surprised by that.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Well, I'd kind of forgotten how much the other two main characters are in the book, and how often we actually get their point of view. Like, I kind of remembered it as I started reading. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to talk about this person, and this person is going to be crucial to the story. But I'd totally forgotten just exactly how much they all interweave together.
Yeah, when I forgot if I decided we were going to do this for our winter read this year, but I'd read this before, and I remember the only thing that I remember about it was that I A, liked it, B, I remember Miriam, and C, I remember like ice fairies, and that's about it. So I mean, this is basically a new read for me, and I'm glad it held up.
I really liked how all the characters contrasted with each other in all these sorts of interesting ways. There was a lot of mirroring, and the differences in their situations highlighting the differences in how they see the world and how different their challenges are and how they approach things. And yet how the lessons one learns might be well applied to another person's situation as well.
Mm-hmm. Well put.
Yeah.
Well, shall we go into spoilers then?
Yes. Read this book.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah. I don't know. Should we do an anti recommendation?
Yeah. Don't read this book if you like action scenes only.
or you expect any action scenes at all.
There's like two action scenes. Come on.
Sort of.
Okay.
And there's numerous descriptions of beatings. If that's not action, I don't know what is.
It's true.
So if family abuse is something you don't like, then also don't read this book, I guess.
I would also say don't read this book if you are prejudiced against Eastern Europeans or Jews.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So just don't listen to our podcast. Go away. Let's see. Don't expect a romance. There is romance, but it's not a romance.
No, it's the lightest of light romances. The fairy tale romance.
Eh, I think we covered the bases.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So, spoilers. Ash, is there something you want to talk about?
Is there something I want to talk about? I don't know. Are we just going to make this the Miriam podcast? She was like by far my favorite character. She's
going to Stepan because Stepan was awesome.
Stepan?
Yeah. Nah.
I have a feeling that would be an unpopular opinion. Stepan's my favorite POV to follow.
Interesting.
Because it's... how old do you think he is?
Like 10?
Yeah, 10-ish.
I don't think he's the most interesting character, and I certainly think that the three main leads, Irina and Wanda and Miriam are all more interesting. But what I really liked about Stepan was the limited perspective we're given in the perspective of a child. And I thought that was very well written. So when he first comes to the how do you pronounce their last name?
Mandelstrom?
Yeah. Mandelstroms. When he comes to the Mandelstroms, and he's used to his family life back with his father who beats them and is drunk all the time. And we get his perspective on what their life is like and going door to door and collecting things from the neighbors. And we're given the reactions of the Mandelstroms and the people around him. We need to piece together what's actually going on based on his limited perspective. And I love that. I think that's a really fun thing to read.
She was able to capture his age really well, where he's like, well, this is this and this is that. You know, it's just that simplistic child mind where it's like, if I do A, then B's going to happen. Or like, this is how it is, even though, like, to us, it's like, that's a very limited view of like what's actually happening in the real world here. And but in his mind, you know, it's like you said, it just makes sense. She writes it so well that it flows and it fits him. I didn't love reading it because I wanted to get back to the others more. And I was like, we already got this with Wanda and Sergei a little bit. So I kind of felt it was a little extra, but.
Okay. Well, I've said my piece.
He definitely feels like Wanda's little brother.
Oh, absolutely.
Their POVs make very much sense next to each other, I think. And I think he was generally used well. I wouldn't have wanted him more in the story, let's say.
Sorry, one more thing. How powerful was the moment when he was the key to unlocking, you know, the door to the Star Kingdom, and he had the acorn, and the Star King found out like what sacrifice had gone into that, and he says like, "What can I do? Like, there's absolutely no way that I could I could bargain for this amazing." Yeah, that was a good moment.
I did really like that moment. For my favorite Stepan moment was just when he grabbed his dad's hand. To prevent him from hitting Wanda, like the poker, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he grabs the poker to stop it. Yeah,
and he's just like, "Yeah, this is a." And he reflects on it later. He's like, "That's just, you know, sometimes you say no."
That entire family is like, I think Stepan's my favorite POV. Wanda's the most interesting character, and what's their third? What's the third one?
Sergei.
Yeah, and Sergei was he was fine, but. What I really liked about their relationship is how much it grew, because at the beginning, when they're just poor, it kind of felt like they were competing against each other, if that made sense. Mm-hmm. Like everyone was doing their own thing and they didn't look out for each other. But once Wanda started hanging out with the cool Jews in town, she was like, wow, this family thing is pretty cool.
Wow, family doesn't have to beat you every night? What a revelation.
And I just really enjoyed watching their whole family relationship grow.
Yeah, I really liked the parts where, because of how desperately poor they are, Wanda's like quietly resentful of them. Mm. But she still takes care of them. She's still a big sister to them as much as she can be. And then as soon as they have resources, like anything at all, it's just like, you share now. This is what you do.
Yeah. And I'm glad it went that way, because you could easily see it kind of going the other way where Wanda gets extremely possessive over her money that she's working. You know, she doesn't want to share. She wants to, you know, just coming from that limited resources or the from being super poor, where she's like, oh, no, this is mine. I earned it. I'm not sharing, because she did have that dislike of her brothers, especially. Right. But
I alluded to this earlier, but. Like, I really liked how Novik, or not, no, I'll call her Naomi. I liked how she gave us different perspectives on, like, the same scenes. Like, through the first part of the book is just Miriam. You think this whole book's going to be following Miriam, and most books of this sort, I suppose, YA, are just going to be first-person perspective, right? And then we get our first POV switch, and we find out it's from Wanda's POV. And from Miriam's perspective, she is just some girl, right? And she... She interprets her actions and the way that she thinks differently. That we finally get Wanda's POV, and Wanda is elated. She is so excited to be here, but she's just so stoic that doesn't show. I love that kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah,
I agree.
I would have to say a little side tangent with the Wanda's family. When her dad dies, that scene could have been extended another page or two of pain and suffering, and I wouldn't have minded one more bit. That was. Something I was, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have minded, but it made sense to end it where it did, of course.
Just that scene where Wanda comes home and he's like, I've sold you. I just felt so angry.
Sold her for a drink a week.
Yeah, basically. Didn't sell her for, sold her for a drink a week. Yeah, just reprehensible.
Oh, sorry. Back to that, again, that first POV switch, when we're in Miriam's perspective, she's just talking to some random villager and he happens to not be able to pay and says, you can't get blood from stone. And then you move to the next POV and Wanda's father says the exact same thing. And it fits so well. It's like, yeah. Oh, that's the guy.
Every POV switch took like a half a step back.
Yep.
In the timeline, so it made sense. Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Well,
you look like you're thinking Ash.
I am. Yeah. Like, I guess contrasting the characters against each other, like, it feels to me that Irina and Miriam are the ones that are like the most natural pair of all of them, given that their fathers are basically exact opposites of each other. Like, Miriam's father is a really good guy, but at the same time, he doesn't have any coldness to him. He doesn't, like, he's not able to, like, even feed his family because he's not able to be a good moneylender. Whereas Irina's father, like, I think he does love her in a way, but
in a way,
he's so cold and trying to use her for such advantage that there is, like, she, like, the one time, like, the first time she feels like he has any warmth to her is when she's doing, like, political machinations after having married the Tsar.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is flipped again with their, for Irina, it's the old woman who was taking care of her, and for Miriam, it was her grandfather. So Miriam's grandfather is a cold and calculating man who is, you know, he has some warmth to him, for sure, but he's, you know, like, for the first however many years of their lives, he was refusing to give support to Miriam's family because he thought that her father was a deadbeat, basically. And right, then, so. Yeah, exactly. So he's well off, and he's calculating, and he's not going to invest more than he needs to because he's a moneylender. And then you have Irina's caretaker. I don't remember her name right now.
Margita.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's warm, but she has nothing. And she's very much adopted Irina as her own child because she's had no one else to love, she said. And she has basically nothing but warmth to give to Irina. But it ends up being what she needs. Anyways, I really liked that pair.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of family dynamic stuff. I mean, we talked a lot about Wanda's family, but, like, even Miriam's family dynamic is a ton, where when she starts to go out and actually collect the money, their parents start arguing with each other, something they'd, like, never done in her life, you know? And she's like, I knew what they were arguing about, even though they wouldn't tell me. And she's like, I'm going to do it. And, like, I don't want to say it's the resentment, but, like, the resentment / shame her parents had about making her go out and get the money so they could have food. And they're, like, unwillingness to be like, yes, I will eat this bread happily, yes, I will wear this blanket comfortably, or I don't want to work, you know, because of what's kind of the circumstances have forced. But
it is a phenomenal opening, and almost entirely because of that reason, because we're given the perspective of a girl who's clearly suffering, and the whole town, whole world is basically prejudiced against her, and her father is too nice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's killing them. And then finally, she's doing what most of the time you'd be like, yeah, you go get her. And we find out her mother is totally against it because they're afraid of what's it's going to turn her into. And they're probably rightfully afraid, considering what happens.
Yeah, this is actually one of the ones I highlighted. My mother's face was full of misery. We didn't speak. Would you rather we were still poor and hungry? I burst out to her finally, the silence between us heavy in the midst of the dark woods. And she put her arms around me and kissed me and said, my darling, I'm sorry, weeping a little. Sorry, I said, to be warm instead of cold, to be rich and comfortable, to have a daughter who can turn silver into gold. I pushed away from her. To see you harden yourself to ice, to make it so, she said.
Yeah.
And I love how Irina's voice is expressed here because...
No, that's Miriam.
Yes, Miriam. I, because she doesn't talk about her own feelings until starting at the end. She very much hides these things from the reader, because she needs to hide them from herself, or else she can't, like, she thinks she's going to die and her parents are going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she pretty much explicitly states it when somebody's given her an excuse. She's like, I could accept this. It was heartwarming to her, but she's like, I can't accept it. Cause if I accept it, then the next person will accept it. And mm-hmm. the next person, and we'll go right back to where we were. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it felt
lots of good quotes. Like
she
that.
Was right.
Yeah. And you know, like the original reason why they're poor is people were just saying, oh yeah, I'm too poor, I can't do this, while they had food on their table and a fire going, and Miriam's family was
talking to each other about how they got one over the Jews in town.
Yep. Let's just be truthful here. They were all just huge jerks and a-holes to them, right?
Absolutely.
Like, there's, yeah. I borrowed the money and I'm refusing to pay it back. That's
absolutely.
a pit of their own making. Nobody forced them to do that.
Yeah, and it's fine for them because they're Miriam's family are Jews, so it's you know, it's fine to screw over the Jews.
That's right. What we got? They're demons. That's why they have the money.
At the end of the episode.
And that that quote you said is kind of the start of her fairy troubles or her Starik troubles as well.
Because maybe the Starik King heard it somehow through the midst of the dark wood that she can turn spin silver into gold.
Yep, yeah. Her hubris brought her down. Yeah, I love when that happens. We've mentioned it. No, I'd rather say it more explicitly. I think partially because of the length and partially just because... mostly just because of great writing, all of the secondary characters are so fleshed out and they feel so real. I mean, we've mentioned all these other characters, like the mother, father, grandfather, czar, etc. We haven't even talked about the czar yet. But they feel realistic and they feel real, and that's good writing.
Yeah.
It is good writing. I think, kind of with pacing and length, I would cut half of Margita's chapters.
Was she the babushka?
Yeah, she's the nanny, basically, of Irina. They were fine, but I felt like if you'd cut half of them or shortened them all by half, then it could have been a little bit more compact and, like, paced better. I didn't feel like I was getting a whole lot out of them. Like, I'd get some, and there were some important things there, but, like, they just went on for too long.
I think, like, two sections from her would have been enough.
I liked her section, so I'm going to disagree.
I think they were all well-written in terms of, like, the I think...
I found it in myself that I'm a bit of a maximalist. Mm. It's like, when people talk about... I understand that there's value in brevity. It's like, one of my favorite authors, Gene Wolfe, he cuts everything. He cuts almost everything out, and I love him for it. But sometimes I just want to stew with the characters, you know?
Maybe he should cut less out so it's more accessible. Just teasing. No, I'm not trying to call out the quality of that and say that it was bad. It just, in comparison, I just didn't feel like it added enough to be kept.
I'm saying I don't entirely disagree. I just enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, and you're allowed to.
Nope. But, that's not how you disagree with me.
Oh, sorry, Harry. You're not allowed to like anything except this book. And the parts that you liked are wrong.
You're allowed to like what I say you're allowed to like.
Yeah.
We could talk
about the czar. Oh, sorry.
Just one thing. I really like how, when it comes to secondary and tertiary and just like background characters, there's quite a bit of stuff hinted at like that is going on under the surface. So with regards to Oleg, the man who tries to
attack her,
kill Miriam and steal her stuff. It says, Oleg had been a big, cheerful man who would buy beer and vodka for his friends in the roundhouse during winter, and he would bring a widow a load of firewood when he was driving one for himself. Even my father, when I came home and told him, exclaimed in regret. When they buried him on Tuesday, his widow was the only one of the mourners who came back from the churchyard with dry eyes. Which I think is a nice way of telling us that this guy was always a terrible person. So, probably sleeping with a widow, spending all of his and his wife's money on drinking with his friends, probably an alcoholic, and probably abused her.
Could be.
I guess the
subtext certainly is there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I took that more as he was just friends with everybody, and he was, I mean, he did try and attack her and take her money, and that doesn't come out of nowhere, but I kind of took it more as he was a friendly person to all until that happened, because everybody else was sad, but...
I like your thoughts, though,
about it, yeah.
And probably cheating on his wife with that widow he took firewood to.
Crazy. Well, I was going to say, Irina, once she got into power, she was like super ruthless. Like super ruthless and cold to everyone and everything. She's, I'm going to get my way. This is what's going to happen. We're going to marry you. Oh, this other kingdom's going to die. I don't care as long as my people are safe. And it's like, I love that about you as a ruler. Like you're protecting your own. But like, man, you're like quick to decimate everybody else in your way.
I want to disagree with you slightly. I don't think she was uncaring. I just think that she was hardened.
Is ruthless uncaring?
Well, you said she didn't care.
She doesn't care about the Starleaks. I mean, she's
not. That's what I'm saying. I think she really did. I think that if she, with her interactions with Miriam, I really feel like we were given that she was not happy about what she had to do, but she felt that she had to do it.
That's fair.
How about the ending? Were you happy with the ending?
It's always nice to have a fairy tale ending.
Aren't fairy tale endings usually a lot more darker than this?
It depends on the fairy tale, yeah. You go in original or you go in Disney, right? Like,
I was surprised how good everything ended up. Chernobog's dead. Stark King is still kind of some other earthly, elfly, hard to understand guy, but maybe he's not so bad. And Miriam seems to like him. The Tsar is freed of his curse, and maybe he and Edina get to know each other better and actually find some love there. So I don't know. I'm happy for them.
Yeah, there's definitely a spark between the Tsar and Edina. I liked the ending. You know, this is the exact perfect kind of romance that I actually like.
I think Miriam and the Stardic King, their main thing was like both of them were expecting something different, you know, in the beginning, right? He wants her to fail so that he can, you know, keep trying.
He tried to kill her.
You could say that, but I don't think he wanted necessarily. He's just like, outright, I want to just kill you. But he kept setting impossible tasks so that he could either succeed.
No, he tried to poison her.
He stopped that, though. He was going to poison her because, he thought she was intentionally trying to get to him, right? Once he realized that she didn't have a clue what she was doing, you know, he still didn't take the time to, like, explain or, like, help her out because that's not what he can do. But, like, as soon as he realized, oh, she's not just, like, trying to get to me because I'm the Lord, you know, she's just being stupid. He didn't go through with the plan to kill her. He could have.
Do you think this is one of those stories where the end really was, oh, I did change him?
Yeah. It's kind of a Beauty and the Beast storyline.
Yeah.
It really is, because dude's just a dick. He doesn't value her at all. He's got his own things, you know. He's got his reasons for doing stuff and not really amor or amor. It's kind of a what's it called? Blue and orange morality?
Yeah.
I'm unfamiliar with that.
It's not black and white morality. It's more like other earthly, you know, like Avatar before Korra.
Okay. No, I like what you're saying, but I think it says it in the book multiple times, the Stardic Lord's like, you surprised me. You tricked me. You got the better end of the deal. I think that was something that like proved that he could like actually respect her because he wants to have somebody at his level or equal to him. And at first she's the lowest of the low. And now she's proven that she can be on his level basically. And I really liked the scene where he's coming to take her home and they're saying their goodbyes. That he's like, oh, by the way, like, here's all these jewels. Like, by the way, I want to court your daughter and do it the right way. And he's like, and everybody's like, oh, what? And he's like, 6 months you don't talk to me. And this is how you tell me you want a date? Like,
I think she tells him, like, oh, there are certain things you need to do for it to be proper in the Jewish tradition. I think he needs to get circumcised.
I think that's only if he becomes a Jew, right? You don't need to convert.
I'm not sure.
I don't think I need to convert to get married.
Whatever,
he was converting just to allow marriage in their faith, yeah.
Any Jews listening, please tell us, because I would love to read a section where the Star King gets circumcised.
Same. I'm going to leave that strictly in the fan fiction section and stay healthily away from that area.
Fanfictions, Derek Lord gets circumcised. That's going to be a good story.
Did you guys... I don't know. That's funny.
I really liked how, you know, kind of like the metaphysics of the relationship are like she shows her worth and that allows him to show his worth back to her. Like it's explicit that like, okay, when she works, when she does something extraordinary, he's able to do something extraordinary in return. So after changing all of his silver to gold, he's able to stop time.
It's like... she created magic so he could create actual magic.
Yeah, and it's really cool.
You don't see it often.
It kind of feels like just, you know, the blossoming of a healthy relationship, you know, like each partner is making the other better.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, you know, and 3 questions a day will answer a lot of questions over 6 months, right? So,
yeah.
I loved her task and her solution for changing all the silver to gold in the storerooms. And
that's a good solution.
He's so smart. I love smart protagonists.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that all 3 of the protagonists, they get out of it through their smarts and through their just like through who they are, right?
Yeah.
There's no, nobody has to come in and rescue them, or nobody, they don't have to rely on trying to beat a man, right? But it's all just, how can I change this to my benefit?
Yeah.
Her deals with her servants was really cool too. Giving a name to the child. I like that scene.
Rebecca. Yeah. Giving a name to all of them, actually. She gave her Jewish name. Yeah.
Jewish names. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved the section where she's deciding what she needs to do. She's free of the Steric Lord, but Chernobog is going to destroy the kingdom. Mm. And her grandfather takes her aside and says, I'm going to explain to you the way that you can do this. And I'm going to explain to you what will happen if things go wrong, or what might happen. Not because I'm trying to persuade you not to do anything. I just want you to know exactly what the dangers are. And then I think he knows, and she knows that, like, it, she's going to do it anyways. But she needs to understand how dangerous this is for everybody. Like, not just her personally, but her entire community. And I really, I thought that showed a real strength of character for Miriam.
And her grandfather, I think.
And her grandfather. I love her grandfather. Yeah.
Awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a powerful scene. And then the scenes, or the, you know, of her walking down the tunnel and every step debating and trying to decide, is what's my debt to the Staric Lord? What's my debt to my people? I mean, that's kind of all throughout the entire book, is debts and obligations and promises, yep, and duty, right? Like,
and how a gift given freely is like, it's like the most powerful thing for the Steric people, right? And this is something that she seems to learn as well. She starts out very much like a Steric, you know, forcing herself to be cold and, you know, like forcing everyone to give her their her due, because no one had ever treated her fairly in the past. So we get the importance of these kinds of things. And then how beautiful it is when someone goes above and beyond that as well.
Step on.
Stepan's mom is the key player there, not Stepan.
Hey, he gave the gift that she gave him, and it was a hell of a gift.
It was.
So you guys talked about how great the grandpa is, and he is, and we also kind of talked about how Miriam's father is kind of a deadbeat, and that's also true. But I also just, I want to, you know, give a small defense for the guy, because I really liked her father anyway. Sure, he didn't step up as a father maybe should, but like she said, the dude was loving and caring, and he showed the Weirdick children, like, what a healthy family relationship looks like. And he's not perfect, but he gave them love. And
yeah,
so I like the guy.
I really like the guy as well. I think that the reasons he doesn't succeed in his career as a moneylender are because he's too good, first of all. Like, he's too warm. But also, like, he doesn't have any choice to be anything other than a moneylender, because that's how Jews in their society are treated. You get to be a moneylender or you get to be a farmer, and they don't have any land. So
it also doesn't help that I feel like a lot of his kindness, I think it's real kindness, especially when you come back and they've got all the money. Like, hey, we've been blessed, so we're going to bless the whole community. Yeah, that's a good
thing. Forgive all the debts.
But it's also, like, they're deathly afraid of pogroms, and they should be.
Pogrom, by the way, an Eastern European word for killing Jews. for a phenomenon that happened where group communities would persecute the Jewish communities in their midst.
And so I really feel like he was trying to walk that narrow path where he doesn't want to piss off the community too much, because, you know, they could just throw them out as they like.
I'll take the opposite stance here just for kicks and giggles. And I hated the dad. I wished he was dead. No, just kidding. I love him as well. He's a good character. It's just, he's not suited to being a moneylender, right? That's all it is anything else, and he would have succeeded. But his love and caring really emulates to the whole family and to everyone else. So.
And to your point here, and another one of the things I highlighted,
Ash, Miriam's, don't lie, you highlighted the whole book.
I feel like, okay, I did.
This is the most highlights I've ever heard from you.
I was just like, this book is so good. Reading it, I need to remember this. Miriam's mother is telling her a story about why it's dangerous that they could be seen associating with the Steric. Skipping to the end of the story. They crept out again that night at last and found their house and the synagogue and all their neighbors' houses on every side burned down. They took that... Oh, They took their few remaining possessions and ran to the edge of the quarter and hired a man with a cart to drive them east, and so came to Visnia, where the Duke had then opened the doors to the Jews, if they came with money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. This is a side tangent, but there was a lot of references to like other fairy tale kingdoms when they're searching for the acorn. You see a rock and he's like, I could be lost in the goblin halls for, you know, 10,000 years. That's useless to me. There's another reference to another fairy tale story and another one. And it was just fun. If we're going to talk a little bit about some favorite scenes, this is one of my lesser scenes, but when Chernobog, after he's been defeated in the Stardate Kingdom, and he comes back into the Tsar and he tries to attack them and he fails because...
Me and mine?
What?
Me and mine?
Yeah, because Yudina is smart enough to be like, I don't want anything from the devil, just leave us alone. And then he's like, oh, and he tries to, you know, take over the Tsar, and he's like, I'll just stay here forever then. And she's like, oh no, he's mine as well. And like, mm-hmm. puts the ring on him, and then that's like, oh, it's like that emotional gut punch, because it's not like an action gut punch, but it is at the same time.
It wasn't pre-planned, right? So she knows the entire time.
She's been planning the whole time to kill him. As soon as she gets pregnant, she's like, I'll have my dad come out. They'll come in the morning. They'll string him up, burn him, and he's dead. You know, it's gone.
But what I mean is, like, she knows what Chernobog is, and she doesn't want anything to do with him. She doesn't want to create a contract with him because she knows what that'll lead to. Contract with the devil, you know, Faustian bargain, whatever. But when the opportunity presents itself, the only thing that she's asked for works so perfectly for what you need. She's the queen. She's her husband. The people that she cares about are taken care of, and the people that she cares about just happens to be a whole kingdom. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not, like you said, it's not out of nowhere at all. No. It's like, it's totally makes sense, and like almost like it was planned, but not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was planned by Naomi. It was not planned by Irina.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like how this might be the best coming of age story I've read, I think, because it has these characters get into situations that they are not ready for, but the overcoming of their situations makes them ready for it. So a quote that demonstrates this that I highlighted. Miriam says, "Why would you take me? You must know I have no magic. Not really. I can't change silver to gold for you in your kingdom if you take me away." "Of course you can, mortal girl," he said over his shoulder, as if I was the one being a fool. "A power claimed and challenged and thrice carried out is true. The proving makes it so."
Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah, back to, I think I would recommend this to people who claim that they don't like YA.
Yeah, absolutely. I would recommend YA this to, like, almost anybody.
How YA would you say this book is? What age range would you actually put to the YA label here?
I don't know, 16 to 20? Same age as the protagonist.
I would give this to a 13-year-old.
I could. I don't think it's inappropriate at all. And I think that they could understand it perfectly well. But I think this goes along with... I think kids could like it and enjoy it, too. Hey, maybe they'll be a little bored.
I think it's a little... I think you'd have to be at least 13-ish.
But I definitely think the main target audience is definitely within the teenage range.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, these kind of books prove that, like, there's nothing wrong with YA.
There's nothing wrong with well-written YA.
There's nothing wrong with well-written YA, just as long as there's nothing wrong with well-written any other. It's just the crap that gets, you know, sometimes.
It's the proportion of bad stuff that I think gives the genre a bad name.
Mm-hmm.
I've read a lot of children's fantasy this year, or children's literature this year. It was pretty good.
I also like how initially... Irina is just surviving one more night. You know, like, it felt very true to me. Like, when you're in a crisis, it's just about putting one step in front of the other. You know, just about doing whatever you can to make it to the next day. And Irina's babushka says, she was safe for another moment, one more moment, and all of life was only moments after all. It's so good. It's... I have so many quotes for this highlighted.
It's so good, yeah. I think, Miriam's family is the only, like, super functional family that I would almost even really call a family.
They almost fell apart, though.
I don't think they were ever that close to actually falling apart. I think
their mother was pretty close to dying, and if Miriam didn't go out there and collect...
Oh, okay, yes. I thought you meant emotionally falling apart, sorry.
Well, if she died, they would.
Right.
Maybe she'd become
I'm talking more middle of the book because of her money lending than her
gotcha.
You know, sickness because of her father, yeah. So, well, not because of him, but
eeriness scenes. They started what, like 33% in, something like that?
Something like that.
Pretty far something in, like well that. After Wanda and all the stuff in the village.
Yeah, Wanda starts pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like 20%.
Yeah, maybe even earlier than that, I think. But yeah, her first night where she could see what's going on with Chernobog and the Tsar. And then the second night where he's like, where were you last night? And she's like, oh, I thought we were having a lot of fun. Like her her acting after the fact and in between the, you know, the incidents were a lot of fun to read. And one of my favorite parts of the book was when the Tsar, everyone's in love with Irina, even though she's like, I don't know, just like very plain looking apparently. And like he's sitting in his carriage just drawing pictures of her over and over again, asking people, is this pretty to you? And they're like, oh, it's your wife. Yeah, she's very lovely.
That was such good comedy. And I loved how her explanation for this was her mother was a witch and she gave her three blessings. You know, like one was to make her beautiful and one was to make her smart. And the third was to make it so that fools wouldn't see either.
Yeah, that was good.
That was really good. I kind of believe by the end that her mother did do this because Irina clearly is super smart and like she has a truly beautiful soul, even if she's like in a kind of objective sense, like she's not very pretty, at least according to other characters' perceptions of her.
I don't know. I was starting to doubt that too. Those sections, it really kind of, I think it purposely makes the reader consider, you know, the nature of beauty and what is beautiful. And I considered it. It's like, well, is she beautiful? Like, because at the beginning, and like, a lot of it felt like a self-perception kind of thing too. And then you are how you are perceived as well, which is a big part of beauty and perception.
And that plays into the Tsar as well. Everybody treated him like a demon spawn and that he was evil, except for one guy. You know, and that really shaped his whole life as well.
Yeah, even his brother was horrible to him, right?
Yep.
No, his brother, he liked his brother.
He liked his brother. But wasn't his brother abusive to him anyways?
No, his brother was the only nice one to him, the only one who gave him the time of day, and then the demon killed him, right? And then,
probably the first one the demon ate.
Chernobog.
Chernobog is a bad guy.
It's a the cool
black
name.
God. Yeah. It's Slavic for black god, quite literally.
Watch Bald Mountain. Yeah. I love Bald Mountain. Should we call it? That was a good book.
I want to do one more quote.
Okay, but you're reaching number five. This is number five.
Five is a good number. Five is a prime number. Five is a number.
Seven. Seven.
Five or seven. Yeah. So if I this one is a biblical reference. Every winter they come from their kingdom of ice to steal and murder among the innocent, my father said, after a moment just as Irina had said. But then he asked me, as a plea, are there even 10 righteous among them?
Mm.
So that, for any listeners who are unaware, that's a reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. When Lot, Abraham's brother, I think, was living in the cities, they were about to be destroyed. And Lot pleaded with God, saying, let me find just 10 righteous, like at first it was 100, but like if I can find 10 righteous men in the city, will you spare them? And
they couldn't.
They couldn't. So this is what I think Irina's father is asking her. It's like, you know.
Yeah. And her response right there is so good. She's like, I don't know, but I know there's at least 3.
I know that there are 3, I said. I put my other hand around my mother's and squeezed back. I have to. You know I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really beautiful, I thought.
There's just so many good scenes like that, good quotes like that. It's like...
I've got more.
I liked almost every scene where there was a bargain. So like when, for example, when the Stark King was like down and he couldn't move, he was just incredibly weak. And Miriam and... her has name again? Middle brother.
Sergei
were trying to help him. And he's like, don't touch me. She's like, you're going to let your pride get in the way of this? He's like, come on, you know who I am. I'm not, like, what do you expect me to do? And like, they had to make a bargain. And he's like, it was a bargain. And it was awesome.
Oh, my block's never crushed by winter.
Keep going. Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
Okay, don't go too far.
Yes. Whoa, pull it back there a little bit. You bargained well, you thief. Like,
yeah, I thought, like, as like a bit before and definitely after the Steric Lord was imprisoned, like, he started showing himself, like, to be much better, you know, like, quite quickly. I thought this was really well done. Like,
do you think that could be perspective? It's like, as the reader and as Miriam herself kind of learns about their motivations, we naturally become more sympathetic.
I think it's a big part of it. And also, like we were saying earlier, like, this is him realizing, oh, he needs to respect Miriam. He's actually a phenomenal person and can do phenomenal things. So he needs to do phenomenal things since he's her husband. He needs to rise to her level.
Yeah. Did you guys have a tough time picturing them at all? Because in my mind, like, every time I read a description of the Starleaks, it was just all ice covered. So I, for like over half the book again, I just visualized them all as like ice humanoid people with like flat faces, just like a sheet of ice. But it's clearly
I
not
kind of imagine them as just have as you more seen... alien. Which one was it? What's the Heat Miser and Ice Miser Christmas movies?
Oh yeah, huh? The year
Santa Ice Miser, but like, yeah, the year Santa, Santa like sexy.
The sexy.
I'm Mr. Ice Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. Ba-da-ba-da.
Yeah, that's my favorite Christmas movie.
Really, that one?
It's my favorite. I love it.
Okay, I've seen it like 20 times.
So. It's definitely more popular choice than my favorite Christmas movie, The Green Knight.
Have you seen Tokyo Godfathers? You need to watch Tokyo Godfathers.
I have not seen it. I'll put it on some kind of mental list and hopefully it won't get lost. I think the only reasonable way to envision the Steric is looking all like visually identical to Arnold Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin. Or alternatively, I suppose my actual vision of them was essentially some artwork that was done for the others from A Song of Ice and Fire, the book series, not Game of Thrones, the TV show. Where they are portrayed as like these beautiful fae creatures of ice. And there is some really good art that I had of them for a while.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Damn, I forgot what I was going to say. Damn, got distracted by my son.
How selfish of you.
So there were like no ice puns.
I don't think that's what she was aiming for in this book. So well, it makes sense.
Zero stars.
Yeah. This does not earn 3.5 stars out of 5.
It's 3.5 out of 3.5. Thank you very much.
It's a 5 out of 7 book right there.
It's a binary scale. It's either 0 or 3.5. Should
I
call it?
I'm good. I'm in danger of sharing more quotes otherwise, so yeah.
Okay, yes. Well, we're going to call it. Nobody wants to listen to that. All right. That has been our discussion on Naomi Novik's Spinning Silver. We liked it. Mm-hmm. If you want to listen to more of us talking about stuff, check out, you know, the other podcast probably next to this one on whatever you listen to it on. Thanks to Craig and the Legendarium. I'm Hiran Fan, and we got Ashaman and Chesky. Goodbye.
Goodbye. See you guys. Bye.